Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is August 4, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about INX scales down US IPO target to $127 million, still set to be crypto's largest. Russian voters' data on sale after blockchain poll to keep Putin in power, report. Genesis crypto lending rebounds in 2Q, firm acknowledges unsecured loans. The 2020 rainy season is tougher than ever for China's Bitcoin miners. Now let's get started. INX scales down US IPO target to $127 million, still set to be crypto's largest. Cryptocurrency and security token exchange INX has shifted its sights for a planned initial public offering, IPO, in the US. The Gibraltar-based trading group filed an F-1 form a securities registration for non-US issuers with the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, on Monday. Originally slated for Q2 2020, the sale is now expected to take place next year. Per the filing, INX will offer 130 million INX tokens at 90 cents each, putting the maximum raise at $117 million, which could make it the largest IPO in the digital asset industry to date. That's down from the previous prospectus, filed in March, where the company hoped to raise $130 million by selling tokens at $1 apiece. The maximum target, if achieved, would still be $27 million more than mining chip manufacturer Canaan raised in November 2019. Investors will be able to purchase INX tokens with cryptocurrencies as well as the US dollar. INX will accept commits made in the stablecoin USDC, Bitcoin and Ether but only if the sale exceeds the minimum $7.5 million raise amount. Although it won't be the first IPO to accept cryptocurrencies, it will be the largest offering yet to do so. INX is a cryptocurrency and security token exchange hopeful that seeks to operate in the US. It's been trying to register with the SEC for more than 2 years so it can offer a regulatory compliant sale and first registered with the chief securities watchdog last summer. The firm's executive managing director, Alan Silbert, is the brother of Barry Silbert, the founder and CEO of Digital Currency Group, CoinDesk's parent company. A series of other crypto companies are making plans to become publicly tradable. Last week, a Hong Kong-based crypto derivatives exchange said it would begin trading on the NASDAQ via reverse listing in Q3. Coinbase is said to be considering a direct listing in the US next year. With INX being an ERC-20 token, investors will need an Ethereum wallet address to participate in the sale. The exchange said in the latest filing it will not send tokens to Ethereum wallets based on the platforms of possible rival exchanges, including Coinbase, Bittrex, Jax, Poloniex, Kraken, Bitfinex, Sex.io, Bitstamp and others are also excluded. INX tokens can be used against transaction fees and confer holders the right to receive 40% of cumulative net cash flow on an annual basis once the platform makes more than it spends. Tokens don't confer ownership of the company themselves. However, token holders may be unlikely to earn much in the first year. In the filing, INX says it hasn't actually made any revenue since its 2017 launch and made a $3.7 million loss in 2019. Indeed, the IPO funds will actually go towards launching the digital trading platform that INX says will mean it can finally earn revenue. It estimates the platform could launch within 12 months of the minimum raise being reached. Passing the minimum raise will allow INX to further develop the platform, develop a new cash fund that can be used to cover both company and customer losses, and apply for a US broker-dealer license. The company can already operate as a money transmitter in 7 U.S. states, including California. The prospectus highlights that INX has received support from high-profile industry figures. Ricardo Spagni, Monero's former lead maintainer and public face, owns 7.5% of the company, just under $1 million worth, and Litecoin creator Charlie Lee owns $100,000 worth of ordinary INX shares. INX said in its previous prospectus it would apply for a New York Bit license, although this ISNT explicitly mentioned in Monday's filing. The company still plans to move its headquarters from Gibraltar to New York at a future, undisclosed date. Russian voters' data on sale after blockchain poll to keep Putin in power, report. Hackers are reportedly selling the personal data of over 1 million Russians who voted electronically, using blockchain technology, during the recent constitutional amendment process. Over 1.1 million data points were stolen and put on sale for $1.50 each on the online forums, the Russian newspaper Kommersant wrote. The data, consisting exclusively of passport numbers, has little value on its own, the anonymous sellers admitted to Kommersant. But such data can be used for phishing attacks when combined with information from other leaked databases. Moscow's Department of Information Technologies, which is responsible for the design of the voting system, denied the report in an email to CoinDesk. The department is regularly monitoring the internet for publications of such data, including the darknet. The database mentioned in the publication has nothing to do with the list of voters who registered to vote online, the department's press office wrote, adding that the information on the Moscow City Hall servers was properly protected and there had been no leaks since the beginning of 2020. The online voting was a part of nationwide voting dedicated to the amendments to the Russian Constitution, which, among other things, eliminated the two-term restriction for presidents, effectively allowing Vladimir Putin to stay in power longer. The online voting system, based on Bitfury's open-source Exonym blockchain and built with the help of Kaspersky Lab, was previously reported to have poor data protection. Journalists were able to decrypt people's votes as well as pull passport numbers out of a weekly protected file posted online by the authorities, a Russian media outlet Medusa wrote. The voting took part during the last week of June and ended July 1, both online and at the physical polling stations. Municipal authorities' employees were forced to vote electronically, BBC reported. In a blog post earlier Tuesday, department representative Artyom Kostyrko said the department compared the screenshot the seller provided with the voter database, and the information didn't check out. However, according to the founder of the cybersecurity firm DeviceLock, Ashad Aganisayan, the database was genuine and has been on sale for a while now. Kaspersky declined to comment on the security issue when asked by CoinDesk. In Russia, every citizen older than 14 has a passport, which serves as a universal ID for any kind of interaction with the government. Each passport has a unique number, and those numbers have reportedly been retrieved from the online voting system and put on sale. Russia is planning to expand the practice of online voting, despite the issues mentioned above. The previous blockchain voting experiment by Moscow, which took place in the fall 2019, used the Ethereum blockchain and also turned out to have weak security. Genesis crypto lending rebounds in 2Q, firm acknowledges unsecured loans. Genesis Capital's lending portfolio rapidly recovered in the second quarter after a sharp decline that resulted from the mid-March Bitcoin, BTC, sell-off. The cryptocurrency lender's book of active trading loans increased 118% from the end of the first quarter to $1.4 billion at mid-year, the firm disclosed Tuesday. The blistering pace of growth was likely an anomaly, the company said. The 100% growth rate in our loans is a function of the fact that we cut our data set at about March 31, Genesis CEO Michael Morrow said in an interview. To think that our loans outstanding would grow by over 100% in just 3 months going forward is probably unrealistic. The business took a hit when Bitcoin, along with the mainstream financial markets, tumbled on coronavirus fears late in the first quarter. The fast comeback signals that crypto borrowing remains a popular tool for arbitrage among professional traders. They typically borrow fiat and put up crypto as collateral, or vice versa, or pledge one crypto asset as security for another. Genesis Capital is the lending arm of Genesis Trading, itself a subsidiary of Digital Currency Group, DCG, which is also the parent company of CoinDesk. Unsecured loans. Market chatter recently has focused on lending practices of the leading firms in the niche. As CoinDesk reported last week, Genesis rival Celsius Network has been quietly making at least some unsecured loans despite its CEO's public boasts that it demands collateral, investing a portion of depositors' funds in derivative contracts, rather than in loans, and rehypothecating, i.e. lending out, collateral pledged by borrowers. All else equal, such practices increase risk compared to an always collateralized, lending-only, collateral-retained model. Genesis claims the interest it collects from borrowers entirely funds the interest it pays its lenders. Moro would not say whether it rehypothecates collateral. Genesis Vice President of Lending, Matt Balanzweig, said the firm makes some uncollateralized loans to strategic partners, but would not say how big a percentage of its loan volume was unsecured. The clients who are lending their assets out through Genesis are high net worth individuals, hedge funds, and other asset managers, and they generate returns of 6% to 12% on those loans. Firms that borrow from Genesis are hedge funds, quantitative trading firms, crypto exchanges, other crypto lenders, and crypto operating companies such as Bitcoin ATM firms. Remix. The lender is still seeing a flight away from US dollar loans to Bitcoin loans. Dollars loans made up 32% of the loan book, down from nearly 36.6% the previous quarter, and Bitcoin's share increased to 51.2%. The second largest cryptocurrency represented in the loan book is Ether, ETH, making up 7.4%. Most of Genesis lending is directly affected by the spread between Bitcoin's spot and futures prices, Moro said. For example, a trader might borrow dollars to buy a futures contract as its premium over Bitcoin's spot price continues to rise. But a period of low volatility in the spot price dampened interest in dollar loans that would normally be used for this kind of arbitrage, Moro said. Now, instead of borrowing greenbacks, traders are borrowing Bitcoin to sell it short while going long futures in a crypto version of the classic Wall Street steepening curve strategy, said Balanzweig. Balanzweig said he expects this dynamic to change in the third quarter as traders look to unwind futures trades. Back in Q2, the traders were actually hoping for that premium to expand, he said. Now they're saying, okay, let's take some of those profits and actually short the curve. Trading holds steady. Despite decreased volatility in the spot market, Genesis trading volume increased by $1.25 billion to $5.25 billion in the second quarter. The majority of the trading volume was on over-the-counter trading desks, with the rest being on exchanges. With its new derivatives trading desk introduced in May, the firm traded $400 million across forwards and options with nearly 50 active counterparties across 10 different assets. Around 67% of the trading volume was executed bilaterally, while the remaining 33% was executed on exchanges. Roughly 80% of the volume has been concentrated in BTC to US dollar trades, with ETH to USD trades and other major tokens making up the rest. The firm is also hoping to introduce capital introduction for family offices that are looking for crypto hedge funds that have the strategies, fee structure and asset exposure to fit their investing needs in the fourth quarter 2020 as a part of its bid to become a prime broker. The 2020 rainy season is tougher than ever for China's Bitcoin miners. The rain has come. The machines are humming. This should be the best time of the year for China's Bitcoin miners. The monsoon season, generally from June to October, brings excessive rain and thus cheap hydroelectricity. But this year is different, proving to be harder than ever for China's Bitcoin miners and mining farm operators, who are estimated to dominate 65% of the global multi-billion dollar Bitcoin mining industry. Since last summer, many mining farm operators rushed to build new facilities in China's southwestern region in anticipation of a dramatic price rise with Bitcoin's halving. But mining difficulty has now almost doubled compared to the monsoon season last year, while block rewards have halved, meaning it is more difficult to mine, with less rewards. Bitcoin miners that have entered the market since last year have to wait much longer to see a return on their investment in mining hardware and facilities. Thomas Heller, Global Business Director of Mining Pool F2 Pool, summarized the situation in a recent blog post. "We're halfway through 2020 and the mining industry has already faced several enormous challenges. Miners had to battle off the macroeconomic black swan of March, pass through the smoke of the halving and a pandemic, and now they're gearing up for the rest of the year's competitive battlefield," he wrote. "A year with a Bitcoin halving and global epidemic rolled into one, it's truly one of a kind. Harder than ever." Many miners expected Bitcoin's price to rise sharply after the halving, said Kevin Pan, CEO and co-founder of the China-based Poolin, one of the two biggest Bitcoin mining pools in the world, along with F2 Pool. "In reality, not only there was not much price momentum driven by halving, there came the mega sell-off on March 12, which caused a large scale of forced liquidation and loss," he said. For 2 months after halving, Bitcoin's price largely remained static around $9,000. Although it jumped above $10,000 last week and is now changing hands over $11,000, it is still at a similar price level seen at this time last year. In contrast, the network's mining difficulty rose to an all-time level within 2 months after halving. "It's now almost twice as difficult to mine Bitcoin compared to last July, while block rewards have halved." Without a significant price breakout, Bitcoin miners' daily revenue has dropped by 70% compared to last year, said Pan, although the recent Bitcoin price jump has helped improve the situation. Indeed, BitInfoCharts data shows Bitcoin's daily mining revenue was around 33 cents per 1 terahash's second THS of computing power in July 2019. It has since then declined to now around 10 cents per THS. Overcapacity. Meanwhile, a surge in interest and investment in Bitcoin mining since last year have led to a surplus of newly constructed mining facilities in China. In April, the oversupply issue had already shifted the hosting business from a seller's market to a buyer's market, with mining farms generally offering a 20% electricity discount compared to last year. Pan estimates that during this rainy season, 20% to 30% of mining facility capacity in Sichuan and Yunnan provinces still remains unused. To be clear, Bitcoin miners and mining farms can still make a profit. But they have to endure a much longer period than expected to break even on their investments. A payback period of 6 months to a year used to be common for Bitcoin miners in China, but if Bitcoin maintains its current prices around $11,000, that could be extended to as long as 2 years. In the eyes of many old Chinese miners, the electricity price right now is not only lower than the similar situation of the halving and hydro season in 2016, but also even lower than the electricity prices during the 2015 bear market, said Heller of F2 Pool. "Lower electricity may be appealing to miners, but it also means mining farm operators are facing an unprecedented investment challenge as the business shifted to a buyer's market," Heller said. Long-term bullish. Despite this year's tough market environment, some are still bullish over the long term and are rolling out products to attract investors. Zhang Zhouer, CEO and founder of Mining Pool BTC, Top, who also runs his own mining farms, recently launched joint mining contracts dubbed B.Top. It essentially sells mining equipment by THS and farm electricity at cost to retailers who want to participate in mining. The company will not charge customers hosting and management fees until the mining profits they receive break even on their investment. Hash Age and Heng Jia, two long-running Bitcoin mining farm operators with over a dozen facilities in Sichuan, also announced a partnership with Chinese crypto lending startup Babel last Friday. Flex Young, CEO and co-founder of Babbel, said the firm is allocating up to $50 million in USDT as a loan for those who choose to host their miners at HashAge and Hangzhou's facilities. In contrast to previous crypto loans that require borrowers to pledge Bitcoin as collateral, this new partnership accepts debtors' miners hosted at HashAge and Hangzhou as collateral. This effort is also one of the industry's first in terms of treating specialized mining equipment, known as ASIC miners, as a tradable asset in crypto-based debt financing. Luxor, a U.S.-based mining pool, rolled out a Bitcoin hashrate price index earlier last month in an effort to provide better transparency into the traditionally opaque market of how much Bitcoin mining equipment is changing hands. Floods? But rain cuts both ways for the mining industry. Flooding in China is among the worst in decades, and has affected over 50 million residents, with nearly 4 million people displaced and over 150 dead or missing. The good news is it could have been much worse. Pan said the flood has so far mainly affected the middle and lower reaches of the Yangtze River. Since most mining farms in Sichuan and Yunnan are located along the upper reaches in the mountain area, which are some 1,200 kilometers, or 800 miles, away from the middle reaches, there are fewer instances where facilities are directly flooded due to the rainfall. But Pan said there have been more regular instances of mining farms' hydropower plants temporarily cutting off electricity generation because the increasing water reserve levels would otherwise cause pressure on the dam. The places that are suffering the most severe damage so far are provinces in central China, including Jiangxi, Hubei, Hunan and Anhui provinces, as illustrated in this multimedia article from the South China Morning Post. Johnson Xu, chief analyst at Beijing-based research startup Token Insight, said mining farm operators nowadays are more experienced in choosing the right location for construction, after witnessing events in previous years where facilities were destroyed by floods and mudslides. Chinese mining farms have already conducted thorough due diligence to pick the locations where potential flooding risk is minimal, so the floods haven't caused a major impact on the mining community, said Xu. Tug of war. Another reason why there are too many Bitcoin mining farms is the push by local governments in Sichuan for establishing the so-called demonstration zone for utilizing excessive hydropower electricity since late last year. Mining farms and hydropower plants that choose to be based in these industrial parks can typically enjoy a stable operational environment with a steady and cheap power supply. In return, they give a portion of their profits to local governments as well as China's state grid, the state-owned utility monopoly. In previous years, many mining farms in Sichuan and Yunnan have been using what's called direct supply electricity. That means power plants sell electricity directly to mining farm operators without having to share the profits with other parties. As local governments have stepped up efforts to rectify the direct supply model adopted by many power plants, this has created a sort of tug of war among local governments, hydropower plants as well as the state grid, Pan said. Some Bitcoin mining farm operators using direct supply electricity wish to sell their facilities at a low valuation given tough market conditions. This tug of war will continue to be a risk factor for potential investors in those mining farms. Overall, the latest regulatory policies in China tend to have a negative impact on those in regulated smaller mining farms, but positive towards firms who meet the local regulatory requirements, Xu added. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.